Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Green Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Green Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. The GreenPlanetFM.com radio program has been now going for 14 years as a voluntary program that supports itself. And it has been the endeavor to empower all listeners to elevate their enthusiasm for existence, as well as to realize our intimate connection with the great sustainer and gives us a body in which to exist. And of course, that is our planet. Not only that, but gifting us free, fresh air, pure, vital, crystal clear water, and if we are organic, verdant soil to grow nutrient-dense food. So that when we connect with the fertility of the garden, we nourish ourselves, we nourish our being. One of the reasons is that our intimacy with the elements that surrounds us gives us solace. A doctor friend said that virtually all his patients over 85 years of age have been owners of their own organic gardens. By being outside among the elements, we can nourish our soul and have time to think, and better still, allow our intuition the space to access ideas and even poetic thoughts and feelings to flood our being. The more we hook into the electronic, noise-ridden energy of a city center, the more challenging it is to become centered, relaxed, and coherent. So the name of the game in many ways is to connect to our breath. Take time to breathe deeply into our being so that we become more coherent as well as mindful of our place. The breath is that which connects us as one species and also to all biota. I wish you to note seriously, change is upon us. Most of my friends in their 60s and 70s, when asked, is this 2017 world the same world that you were looking forward to in old age? And everyone shakes their head. Yes, we have to do better, far, far better than this, especially as many have both children and grandchildren. So what type of future are you wanting to bequeath your children and grandchildren? Because as you know, it is a huge responsibility bringing into the world another human being. In this interview, Bruce Lipton is in full flight. In doing so, he offers up many choices for us to make the changes that we need to take to secure the future of our civilization. And I trust that you will take that extra care in listening, as we definitely need you as we look to shaping a conscious future so we as a planet can come through this impasse as a planet of peace and goodwill. The window is closing. What can you do to assist? Because we need every one of you. In the studio this morning, I have Bruce Lipton. Bruce has been the author of many books, The Biology of Belief, Spontaneous Evolution, and The Honeymoon Effect, and he's involved with consciousness across the face of our planet Gaia. Greetings and welcome. Kia ora for coming into the studio, Bruce.
Tim, I am most excited to be here because New Zealand, boy, that is the home free all place of this world. And as a person who's a resident of New Zealand, I want to thank all of you citizens for letting me be a resident of New Zealand, because as a citizen in the U.S., it's like, thank you for being here.
We don't mind being a lifeboat for conscious beings, good-hearted, warm-hearted, who want to be here to shift evolution, make that paradigm shift or jump for us. Bruce, consciousness and the awakening of consciousness on our planet. At the moment, intuitively I've felt over the last year, and particularly since last 6 months, there's an awakening of people. They're really realizing that we're in a tight corner, and it's time for now to fertilize our imagination and really start growing, connecting, sharing optimism, positive, looking for solutions, and doing things that will bring us closer together from a holistic standpoint.
This is absolutely a requirement for our survival and civilization at this time, for a very important reason. Science has been talking about it for a period of time now, and the public maybe heard little pieces of it, but haven't really paid attention to a simple fact, and that is we are in an extinction process. Five times on the history of this planet, the biosphere was thriving. It was rich and growing. And five times something happened and life essentially got wiped out. From 50 to 90% of all life got wiped out at these five events. And we refer to them as mass extinction. So five times life was thriving, some event happened and essentially wiped out 50 to 90% of life. Example, we're understanding when the dinosaur period was here, that ended in a calamity when a giant asteroid or comet hit the planet and upended the environment, and the dinosaurs were lost in this upheaval. What's interesting about it is that today scientists have been plotting the loss of species. Now, let's just understand there's always a loss of species. It's a small number, but every year there's always a loss of species. What scientists have noted in the last few years is that the loss of species now is 1,000 times greater than the background loss. In other words, there's always a loss, but today that loss is 1,000 times greater than background, meaning we are now actually into what is called the sixth mass extinction of life. So that the whole bioweb is starting to collapse. Pieces here and there, we talk about the coral bleaching out and dying and all that. And people go, well, who cares about the coral? And I go, well, listen, it's like a pyramid. Everything at the lower level is building up to support everything at the upper level. And if you drop the bottom out at the lower level, then everything that's built on top of that, including us, is about to fall as well. So, simple fact. Science has recognized we are now in the sixth mass extinction. And it's interesting because geologists refer to periods of the Earth, all different periods. And the current period is called Anthropocene. Anthropo is human. And so what they're recognizing is that the geology of the planet, the composition of the atmosphere, the water, the land, is so being altered by humans that this is called the human interference phase, in a sense of altering our planet. So let's come down to it. We are facing extinction. We now recognize by science that human culture, the way we're living on this planet, is the primary reason for the current mass extinction. Well, that leads us to only one understanding. It says you have two choices. Continue on doing what you're doing, and extinction is looming in our future. So near that, for example, science has estimated, in a conservative estimate, that 2048, and that's not far from now, there will be no fish in the ocean. Planet Earth, no fish in the ocean, 2048, because of our couple of things. Overfishing, destroying breeding grounds, and of course polluting the water. Collectively, these are destroying the sea. And that is like the worst sign you could see for the future of civilization. If there's no fish in the ocean, boy, we are next. So is this not 1,000 years? No, this is 2048. You know, it's within 30 years, this is going to manifest. So we have to do something. And we've known about it for a while, but nobody's done anything. I think Gaia has now pushed us into the corner and says, well, listen, folks, this is put up or shut up. You either do something now or forget about it, because it's going to be a point where it's going to be too late to recover, because the things that we destroy the Earth with at this moment take a recovery time to bring it back.
A long time.
Yeah, and the amount of destruction is just amazing. And the idea is every day of destruction sets us back further and further, because it takes more than a day to recover a day of destruction. So we're on a negative slope here. It's going down really fast. And so you look around, you go, so what's happening in the world? And I go, there's something called the biological imperative. I said, what's that? I said, it's built into every living organism, and simply the biological imperative is the drive to survive. Basically, even a bacterium, as primitive as it is, if you try to kill a bacterium, it's got a drive built into it to try to do everything it can to stay alive, even if you're trying to kill it. And so everything has this drive to stay alive. Well, the issue about it is when life is under threat, we can experience it, because the drive to stay alive is like an alarm clock that says, okay, you're under threat, be careful. And this is interesting, because people all over the globe right now have a gut feeling, and that's where the drive is. A gut feeling, this isn't right, this isn't working, something's going on. And what is that? That's a collective receptivity of a fact that it's not sustainable. Because the drive to survive in a world that's not sustainable is going to certainly start waking you up to say we have to do something. And it's interesting, because basically, simple line, and I'm going to give you a chance to talk to him as soon as I finish this sentence. Basically, the drive to stay alive is really concerned with how we live on this planet, the culture, and that's what science said. Human behavior is responsible for the looming extinction. So I said, well, what do you do? We're facing this. What do we do? And the answer is, you must profoundly change the way we are living on this planet. Everybody knows it's not sustainable. In fact, just to keep up with the demands in today's population, we actually need two planet Earths. And if the demand grows higher, we need three planet Earths. So obviously, we only have one. And so we're down to the bottom line. It says what? The drive to survive is signaling that something is wrong. People are getting agitated. The world is shaking and falling. And the important part is it must fall. Because if we continue what we're doing, the extinction, as I said, is looming. And I go, well, what does that mean? Change the way in which we live. And I love it because old Donnie Trump, America first. Well, in this case, yeah, he's right. America first. America will probably be the first country to collapse and break its structure because of his leadership. And this is what we're seeing. People voted for him because they didn't like the way the system was running. But now that they have him for just weeks, the most amazing weeks in the history of the planet, I think, is that he has thrown a big monkey wrench into the way the U.S. is working, challenging every aspect about it, waking people up everywhere, and people not just in the States but globally are responding to Trump, saying this is not the world we want. And I go, wow, thank you very much. This is the slap in the face, the Donald Trump slap in the face that says we must change. And that means people are now banding together. And this is the most important conclusion of that is this. Each one of us is a unit of energy. We're energy beings. And our energies have been separated by intention. So we look at each other as individuals separate from each other. And I go, what do you mean by intention? I say, because if energy comes together, it becomes very powerful. And if you cause people to separate from each other or see each other as different from each other, then you are breaking the energy up into these little tiny pieces, which has no power.
Fragmenting.
Yeah. And today what's happening, Donald Trump is causing a coalition of individuals coming together, sharing their energy and saying, this is not what we want. So I'm very excited because he's precipitating evolution. He's causing us to say, this is not what we want. The people are going to band together. Now, the outcome is not, clear at this moment. Why? We could just as easily go extinct, and this is not the first time. There have been civilizations here that didn't make it, and we only talk about them in myth and fable, but they were here, and we don't know about them. Why? Because they failed. And the thing is, well, where are we? Well, we're on the knife edge. If we lean one way, we're going to fail, and if we lead the other way, we can make an evolutionary jump. And so welcome to the evolution. It's in process. It's beginning right now. Here's our understanding. We are energy beings. And there's two ways you can respond to the world and what we're doing right now. We could look at all the negative things and say, I'm going to fight those negative things. Like, I'm going to go fight Donald Trump. And I go, what happens when you take a negative energy and a positive energy, like two wires, negative and positive, and you touch them together? The answer is you get sparks and fire, and it blows up. And I go, well, what's the net result? Negative energy A plus positive energy B, when added together, equals zero energy. You lost all the energy. So here's a suggestion. We're up against the wall. We can go fight Donald Trump. But if we do that, then we're taking our very good positive energy and actually canceling it with the negative energy. The best conclusion, Tim, and this is what you've been talking about for years, is that the positive energy not fight the negative energy. The positive energy is gather itself together. The more units of positive energy that come together, the more powerful that unit is. So the directive at this current time is you have a choice. You can go out and be against something, which is then canceling your energy, or we can coalesce together and be for something. And I think that's the decision that everybody has to make at this moment, because this decision will determine whether we fall off the knife on one side into extinction or fall off the knife on the other side into a new evolution of the planet.
But coming together synergistically, I know I've worked in fighting fires in Australia, And boy, you get out there, you don't care about yourself in many ways. You're putting out the fire so that no other people are going to be affected by it. And when afterwards, when you've been successful, the euphoria.
Yes.
And I think this is a really important thing. Now, with James Lovelock, when he brought out the Gaia hypothesis way back in the late 1960s, he intimated but never really followed up on the fact that human beings are an extension of Gaia, of Mother Earth. We are the nerve endings. And so that when I stand up in, say, the Amazon jungle with a large sign saying, stop logging and deforestation, I am a nerve ending telling all other nerve endings. So if media comes in or just people come in and see that sign, they start to realize that, well, we've come to a limit here, and that limit is saying we cannot do it anymore. We've got to do something else. Same as somebody standing up with a sign in Palestine or somebody standing outside Trump Tower saying, right, America, you've got to come together and work for the betterment of not only the North American continent, which includes Canada and Mexico, but also the benefit of the biosphere, because when I breathe in, the planet breathes out. And when the planet breathes in, I breathe out. So there's a, what you call a symbiosis. There's a continuity. I mean, the invisible breath that plankton and trees give us, we've got to take care of them, because I have heard that even plankton are being affected by ultraviolet light being increasing, and also the fact that there's nuclear radiation all over the North Pacific. So we've got to take care of our great sustainer and the systems within, particularly plankton and trees, and stand up. You've got to be courageous, Bruce, and I find that a lot of people are still coming from fear.
Well, fear is a great motivation. We talked about the fact biological imperative is the drive to survive. If you have fear in your life, the biological imperative is going to, you know, raise the hair on the back of your neck because it says fear is a threat to the biological imperative. And we now know we're in threat. So the idea is that you could either go in fight or flight, which is how you can face a threat, or you can let go of fight and flight and go into growth, because there's growth or protection. And when we're in fear, we're in protection. And when we're in protection, we compromise growth. That is a requirement. Because if you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, and let's say you're trying to take care of your body's balance of chemistry, the body's balance of chemistry is totally irrelevant if this tiger catches you. So basically it says, no, in a fight-or-flight situation, you do not maintain the body. You take every bit of available energy and put it aside and say, this is to run from the tiger. Well, I say, well, that's a problem, because if we don't take care of the physical body with the energy, it will collapse as you're in a state of fight or flight. It won't make it. And fight or flight, the fear, is the primary cause of the illnesses on this planet today. I mean, here's a fact that people must know because they don't get it. And that is only about 1% of disease can be attributed to a genetic issue. I said, well, 1% of disease is, okay, the organic machine has got a problem. What about the other 90-plus percent? And that's where most important understanding. 90% or more of illness on this planet has no organic foundation in the biology and is strictly related to stress. And stress is, what is stress? It simply says, you have a destination, a vision, you have something you want. And if anything gets in the way of that, but then by definition, that's caused stress. So everything that is really blocking us from enjoying and fulfilling our wonderful opportunities on this planet is a stress inducer. And stress is now the primary cause of illness. And so basically, stress is a psychological issue. And all we have to do is say, wait a minute, don't buy into this fear, because it's going to, you know, hobble you. It's going to interfere with your immune system and the mechanism of your body. I mean, that's what I teach. It's the nature of biology at that point. And yeah, we're facing these great threats. And then, as you said, one thing we should bring back up is we have historically been separated from the environment. And I'll say, well, let's go back to Judeo-Christian beliefs in the Bible. It said, yeah, the environment was created, and then humans were added on top, so that, like humans said, there was an environment, then humans were separate, and they came into an environment like that. And it's like, no, wait a minute. This is a total misunderstanding. we evolved from the environment. We are an integral part of the environment. There's no way you can say, let me look at the universe of being outside of the environment. Why? You are the environment. So what we don't recognize, because our belief system that made us separate was the one, oh, we have domain over nature. And it's like, no, we don't have domain over nature. We are nature. And therefore, when we have taken the course of destroying or upsetting the balance because nature is separate from us, inadvertently, we are destroying ourselves because we are nature. If you destroy nature, you destroy humans. There's no way you can be on this planet. If all the coral disappears on this planet, there will be no humans on this planet because everything that that coral was building up higher and higher will start to collapse. We have to let go of man is so special and separate from the environment. This is not true. Humans evolve from the environment. We depend on that environment. And in fact, go back to the indigenous people of this planet. They grew up in a world that said they are a gardener within a garden. And their intention was to keep harmony in the garden. People, you have to recognize, a garden is not a battleground. Although in a Darwinian theory, it says the garden of Earth is this struggle for survival.
Chop down a tree.
Yeah. And so basically it says, oh my God, our whole philosophical principle has detached us from the environment and created a war, presumably between humans and the environment. And therefore, when we attack the environment, it's like self-destruction. And now it's gotten to the point of, no, it's not a question, are we in a self-destructive mode? That's already a given fact. We are going extinct. Six mass extinction, humans responsible. You got a little short time left to make these changes to keep us here. And that's why there's a global upheaval in process. It's not a coincidence, not an accident, it's a requirement. You want to stay alive on this planet? We've got to change the way we're living, and that's a simple fact.
And that's where we have huge challenges. I'm quite happy living very frugally. I'm very happy living small, growing my own veggies. I don't have extensive food choices from around Swiss chocolate or food coming in from pineapples being flown in from somewhere. I'm very much localized. And so one of the key issues, key statements I like to make, Bruce, is that we have to, first we've got to commit, and then we've got to organize. And we've got to organize adroitly. We have to be really, really on the ball when we organize and do it locally. Just get up a set of people around you who have a common interest. And particularly, I know that if you really have a family person, get a grandchild and sit that grandchild on your lap and say, right, what do you want, or ask, what would we want to leave for these children?
Absolutely, and this is the problem. We are robbing the future. I have my kids, and I even have some grandkids. Now, the issue is, what am I going to tell my grandkids? Here, see, this is a picture of a fish. This is what used to be in the water, so you know. Here's a, actually, I have a movie. This is what a fish looked like. In your future, you won't see them unless we do come back and start to be the gardeners once again.
You see, I'm always looking for a trigger, Bruce, and not in the form of anything to do with an armament, but for the last 40 plus years I've been waking up and saying, what is the trigger that'll awaken people to mass consciousness? I've always liked mass consciousness. I've had this wonderful idea that we wake up one morning, particularly in spring, and there's a fragrance from all the flowers, alters, and the essence of that flower, be it a clover flower or another flower from the garden, be it a daffodil. Or
let's go gardenia because they're beautiful.
Well, okay. Yeah, gardenias are delightful, I must admit. And we take this fragrance in and it connects with us. And all of a sudden it wakens up our heart. And we all know that in actual fact we are brothers and sisters. That then global group mind at heart can come into being. This is one of my lovely fantasies, Bruce, that Gaia will actually come to the fore and wake us up all together because she has an interest in her life continuing without having to go through a collapse, which will take most probably 100 million years for the bacteria to clean up the water, to clean up the atmosphere, to allow another species to emerge who is far more conscious and aware than what this species is.
Well, this is actually the story that I've been talking about for 10 or 15 years now, is that we are facing an evolution. And what's emphasized in the evolution is not that the human physiology, the human body structurally is going to change. That's not the evolution. We're not going to look any different. The evolution is consciousness. We're going to evolve exactly what you just said, that while we perceive ourselves as individual, consciousness is a collective factor of the entire community. And when we start to be in harmony with our consciousness, the power that will emanate from that consciousness will alter the world. And you go, you mean humans thinking can affect the world? And I go, you know, it was 1930 when quantum physics came in. And in 1930, they recognized right away that consciousness was the source of the world in which we live. This is quantum physics. It says we live in an energy, like an aquarium of energy. But human consciousness and focus takes that energy and turns it into the physical expression we call the planet. And this is quantum physics. This is not like, oh, new age weirdo stuff. Actually, in 1930, the problem was conventional physicists could not accept that because they didn't have that. They're coming from a Newtonian world. There was only Newtonian physics. Mm. There was no quantum physics. Every physicist was a Newtonian physicist. And then one day they wake up and go, well, you know, all that stuff we've been talking about for a couple of hundred years is not really right. And when the new quantum mechanics came out, it emphasized that human, I remember, I think it was Eddington, the quote was, we see the world as a giant machine when in fact it's more like a giant thought.
So James Jeans and also
James Jeans.
Sir Arthur Eddington as well.
Yeah, both of them. And then just recently in Nature, one of the most prestigious journals in the entire scientific world,
yes,
quantum physicist Richard Conhenry from Johns Hopkins, his article was entitled The Mental Universe. And the conclusion, I love it because the last sentence in this article about the nature of quantum mechanics said, the universe is immaterial. It's mental and spiritual. Live and enjoy. And I say, that's taken what, from 1930 all the way up to, you know, 2010 or something like that, to repeat the same story that we must own the nature of the quantum mechanics, which is the most validated of all sciences on this planet. There's no science that has more validation. And the principle of quantum mechanics is that human consciousness is shaping the world. And our consciousness, as I talk about in biology belief, has been programmed by others. So we're not using our consciousness to shape the world. We're using our education, our programming as children. I go, yeah, but where did that come from?
Yes.
And the problem is not a good source. And this is why this upheaval, because using that education, using that awareness, we now have pushed the planet Gaia to the brink of sixth mass extinction.
Bruce, before we're talking about parenting of children, and this is the big one, because there's the old statement now, every baby born into this realm is an energy bundle of exponential potential. And because of the stresses of life, parents, and particularly, well, dads maybe, but mums and dads saying, oh, keep quiet, shh, go to bed, go and stay in that room, get out of the way.
Or you can't do this, and you're not good enough, and who do you think you are, and you don't deserve this.
And they're squashed.
That's it. So psychologists have recognized that the programming that we get before age 7, 70% is disempowering, self-sabotaging, and limiting. All of those things we just mentioned, like who do you think you are, you're not lovable, or whatever this is, parents are trying to goad their kids into becoming something different, not recognizing that a child under 7 is not fully conscious and can interpret what the meaning was. When parent says, you don't deserve that, the parent doesn't mean for the rest of your life you deserve nothing. Mm. The parent means for right now, whatever it is you're doing. But they don't recognize a child under 7
That's
is recording
right.
Exactly the words. So the program slam a child under seven heard was, I do not deserve. And that becomes part of their programming. And unconsciously, because it's called subconscious, unconsciously, the function of the mind is to take those programs and manifest reality. So if I got a program that says, I do not deserve, and the function of my mind is to make reality out of that, then unconsciously my behavior will result in when I stand back and go, wow, I didn't deserve that. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, isn't that your life is coherent to your program? And you know what's interesting is because everyone, most everyone, large numbers of people, have seen the movie The Matrix. And I go, The Matrix, yeah, well, that was a movie that we all got programmed, and you got a blue pill, you go back into the program, you take a red pill, you get out of the program, that whole story. And I said, when you go into the video store, I said, where do you find The Matrix? I say, it's under science fiction. And I go, it's a documentary. It's a fact. It's a fact. It's a documentary. We've all been programmed. And you say, well, is that new science? I go, well, the science part, understanding of the programming is new, but guess what? The Jesuits, 400 years they've been telling people that, and nobody understood what they were saying. They were saying, give me a child until it's seven and I will show you the man. People didn't understand. What the heck were they saying? They were saying, give me the programming of a child until it's seven and I will create the outcome. And that turns out to be absolutely true scientifically. The programming you got before seven will determine the outcome of your life, the health, behavior, the characteristics you express, the job you'll end up with, relationships you may or may not end up with. It's all been shaped by programming. So the fact is, yes, we are in the matrix. We have been programmed, and the programs are limitation.
So how do we get beyond this dualistic world? I'm really interested in how we language, how we choose our words when a child does something wrong. Instead of jumping on them straight away, we need to get alongside them and say, hey, I'll tell you what, this is another way. And we have to be really acute with the vernacular.
Absolutely, because, and I want to emphasize that, very acute with the vernacular, which you just said, for the simple reason. This is a fact. A child's brain, you can put wires on a person's head and read brain function by the vibration. It's called electroencephalography, EEG. Well, what we find out is that a child under seven is not operating from the vibrational EEG frequency of consciousness. They're actually a little below consciousness. A child is in a lower level of vibration called theta. The theta phase of EEG is imagination. Well, you say, yeah, that's true. You know, a child lives in the real world and the imaginary world. The mother says, give me the broom. And the kid says, I don't know what you're talking about. This is a horse. Because at the moment the kid is riding a broom, the kid is not seeing it as a broom. In their imagination, this has now actually become the horse. So that's a character of theta. But the most important character of theta, which wasn't discussed, is theta is hypnosis. So it says the first 7 years of a child's life, its brain function is primarily in hypnosis. To do what? Download how to be a functional member of a family and a community, because I can't give a five-year-old, a one-year-old a book and say, learn these rules and you'll be a good member of a family or a good member of a community. The only rules that we know how to behave as a member of a family and community are acquired through a hypnosis download before age seven by observing the teacher, which are the parents, the siblings, the community. And that's why the Jesuit said, give me that kid for first 7 years. Why? Because if I can program that first 7 years, the child will be a manifestation of that program. And we are. And that's why we have to wake up and say, wait, the life I'm living, it somehow or other, I had great wishes, ambitions, and desires, and I ended up here. And I go, that's because your consciousness, the one that we want to elaborate on, the one we want to enhance, is creative. Subconscious is program. And it turns out science has revealed that 95% of the day we are not operating from our conscious creativity. 95% of the day we are playing the programs that we downloaded before seven, which are the critical ones, as you brought up. You know, you don't deserve this. Who do you think you are? You're not good at this. And 95% of the day we're operating from those, and it's called subconscious, meaning when those behaviors are playing that are sabotaging us, it's below your awareness. So you are unconsciously going out and inflicting damage and harm by playing a program that you got from your family and you're the one that doesn't see it. So I just finish on why that's so critical. Because if I go forward with my conscious mind, which has wishes and desires, like I'm going out today to get the best job, I'm going out today, I'm going to be the healthiest example of myself, I'm going to go out and find the best relationship. Yeah, that's conscious wishes and desires. I live in a beautiful planet. I live heaven on earth. Conscious desire. And I say, but only 5% of your life is coming from that creativity. 95% is just a playing of the program. This is a fact of science. So it says, oh my God, you go out with the greatest wishes and you come home and not acquiring any of these. And then you get very upset because you said, but I want out for A and I came back with B, and the universe, I didn't ask for B, the universe did. So we have this feeling, oh, I'm a victim because I really wanted health or happiness and I end up with this, and therefore, and because, and this is the catch, this is the whole thing, because it's subconscious and the behaviors that sabotage us play without us being aware that we're playing them, then we didn't realize the universe was never against us. It was our own subconscious programming that invisibly sabotaged us. And here we are feeling that I am a victim of the world. And I go, no. You're a victim of your program. And by changing this program, and, you know, Tim, this has been your life for years. I mean, I don't know how far back you go of dealing with, can we change consciousness? Can we operate from this higher level of consciousness? The answer is you can. You can become what is called mindful. And mindful means keeping your conscious mind present instead of wandering. And that's when the subconscious kicks in, when you're thinking 95% of the day. And if you stay mindful, then your whole life is different. And that's why I wrote The Honeymoon Effect. I said, no matter how your life sucked, when you fell in love with somebody, that next little period when you first met them and you just are experiencing what I call the honeymoon effect, it's heaven on earth. And I go, wait a minute. Your life sucked all the way up until you met this person. And 24 hours later, all of a sudden, it's heaven on earth. I said, what the heck happened? And the answer is simple. You became mindful for the first time in your life. And I said, well, what was the consequence? You stopped playing the sabotaging programs 95% of the day. So what was the consequence? To you, it was heaven on earth. You stopped playing the program and your world turned from struggle into total happiness. And if that's why I used that book, was to show people that honeymoon experience, that's available to you every day the rest of your life, as long as you don't fall back and default onto the subconscious program. Or, and then this is what I've been involved with, what if you just rewrote those subconscious programs, the negative ones, replace them with positive ones? And I go, well, then that's even better, for the simple reason, and 95% of the day, you don't even have to make an effort to have heaven on earth, because 95% of the day, your subconscious program will be assuring that you have heaven on earth, and the world changes. So the world changes. Did the world change? I go, no, you change. And this is why I'm so happy to be here with you, Tim, because I know you've been a proponent pushing this for years and years and years. And I just want to say the science is 100% behind you. You get into mindfulness, you get into consciousness, and the world changes into heaven on earth. And so all of us are on a mission now. The hell that is on earth is what we created from subconscious. And all we have to do is wait, change consciousness, start coming from love, start coming from harmony, and the world will express love and harmony. And that's the wake-up call right now.
I'm speaking with Bruce Lipton. He's the author of Biology of Belief, Conscious Evolution, and The Honeymoon Effect. And you can get to his website at brucelipton.com. brucelipton.com. And there are modalities, there are holistic modalities that can assist us.
Oh, to God,
shift.
Thank you.
There's heaps of them.
Yes.
And it's important for people to realize, well, look, I may just have to spend a little bit of money to go and find somebody who's an expert practitioner who is mindful themselves.
Yes.
Who have been down that road. Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, of course, because I can tell you the choice. You can say, if I keep my programming the way it is, and I'm going to assure you, 90% of illness on this planet is a consequence of the programming that provided for stress because we're in disharmony. And I said, well, how much money do you want to spend on fixing yourself, or less money to change the program? And then you won't ever have to worry about fixing yourself. Health is an aspect that we were granted health on this planet. And the reality is, how come we don't have health? And I said, oh, that's behavior, not the biology. And so what little money you put in for a change is going to have great return, because it's less money for paying for the illness you're going to get if you don't do the change.
Yes, I've been fortunate to come across some very good practitioners, Bavaria being one of them, being able to access your memories and go in and see the ones that are unhappy and or have came to conclusions there but were extremely negative, and go in and clean those memories right out. Lay in a new timeline.
Yeah.
Lock it in. And all of a sudden you're not carrying the shadow, because you blew that shadow off under the care of a very good practitioner. And so with me, I find now that I'm not being held back by anything. And all I want to do is be in the moment, create, be present, etc.
I appreciate that 100%, because that was the net result of when I wrote The Honeymoon Effect. I thought, how come we always end up having this wonderful honeymoon and then it disappears? And that's when I started to realize, because we can only stay mindful and avoid the programming for a period of time, but life comes in on you and then we start thinking and all of a sudden the programs start playing again. So indeed, it becomes very important. And let me just help people, you know, because you say, hey, we got programming. Actually, the programming started before you were born. You were programming in the last trimester of pregnancy. The fetus is being programmed by the mother's emotions, because the emotions are chemistry in the blood, and the fetus is nourished by the blood of the mother. So the fetus, whatever the mother's experiencing emotionally, so is the fetus. So emotional behavior, like a song, is being recorded by the fetus even before it's born. And then afterwards, then we're programmed by our responses to the world around us. And then all of a sudden, it becomes an issue. The individual says, oh, my God, I don't know what the program is. Because if I said, hey, Tim, what program did you get when you were one? You were one? I have no idea what the... I said, you were being programmed. And now all of a sudden you realize, oh, my God, I've been programmed for 7 years. I have no idea what the hell the programs are. I go, wait, you do. So let's save a lot of time for people right now. If you're out there, I'm going to save you a lot of time. And here's where it goes. Yes, we all got programmed. Some of the programs are good. Some of the programs are bad. Matter of fact, unfortunately, 70% are bad. And I say, well, how do you know what your programs are? And I'm going to tell you right now. Science has revealed that 95% of our life comes from the programs, subconscious. So I say, oh, then your life, by definition, is a printout of your program. So here's the summary. Save you a lot of time. The things you like that come into your life and come in easily into your life are there because you have programs to acknowledge and bring them in. In contrast, and this is one I want people to pay attention to, anything you work hard at, anything you struggle over, anything you put a lot of effort into making it happen. I have to sweat over making this happen. I'm working so hard. And I go, why are you working so hard? And the answer inevitably is that thing that you're trying to get and you're not getting is not because you can't get it. It's a reflection that you have a program to not support that. So right now, I'm going to save you, you know, thousands of dollars of psychoanalysis and lots of tissues. You don't have to cry. And I just say, look at your life. Just sit down and look at your life and recognize this. The things that come easy, you have programs for them, and that's why they came in. But the things that you're looking for and struggling to get, it's not that you can't have them. It's that they represent programs that in your programming, your subconscious, that do not support those wishes and desires. So all of a sudden it says, oh, well, I'm looking for a relationship, I can't find it. I go, oh, well, your program about relationship is incorrect, and you're going to keep repeating this program. And that's why people, they get married, then they get a divorce, then they get married again, but it's the same person, different color hair. And then they get a divorce, and they get married again, same person, yet another different color hair. It's like, how you keep ending up with the same people? And the answer is because you keep playing the same program. And that's a reflection. If you keep doing the same, trying to do something, and you keep getting the same result, obviously the issue is this. The result is the program. You are observing your program. So look at your life right now and just say, what is it that's missing that you really want? And when you make an effort, you can't get there. That's your starting point, because that inevitably is a program that is a limitation. and not the universe. The universe will not limit you. The universe offers you, and Tim knows this, and now I know this as well. Heaven on earth is an everyday life experience if your program encourages heaven on earth. And since I've rewritten my program, as Tim talked about, because if you couldn't, this would be a real crappy radio show, because I'd have to say, oh, that's your program the rest of your life, forget about it. No. You can rewrite the program, Tim said so. And I'll just let me offer this. If you're looking for different ways, my website, very simple, brucelipton.com. Under resources, I have between 20 and 30 different modalities listed under resources of how to change your programming to get your power back. You are empowered when you get rid of any program of limitation. And all of a sudden it says, heaven on earth was given to us. It's only the programming that has removed it from our sight.
Excellent, Bruce. We've got 7.5 billion human beings.
And one humanity.
This is what I like. You always said that the human species, we are a super organism ourselves.
Yes.
And we live on a superorganism that is Gaia.
Absolutely. And this is what the evolution is all about. As I mentioned, it's not the evolution that my physical body is going to change. The evolution is that my relationship to all the other physical bodies is going to change. To recognize that each one of us is a cell in the body of something much larger called humanity. So when you look at your own body and say that's a single living organism, and then I correct it by saying, no, if you had eyes that could magnify and see close enough, you would see you're not a single organism. You're made out of 50 trillion cells. A human body, by its definition, is a community. And the cells got together because there was more intelligence and more ability to work in a community than to stay as a single amoeba living by itself. This is the same reason why humans are coming together as cells, because collectively we can create things that cannot even be imagined at this moment as individuals. And this is a process of quantum mechanics called emergence. And it says you can bring all these pieces together. You can know every power of an individual piece. Sort of like, you know what a resistor does? Yeah. You know what a capacitor does? Yeah. You know what a transistor does? Yeah. And I go, well, you can know all these things, but did you know that there's a computer? I said, what's a computer? You can't see it in any of the pieces. It's only the assembly of the pieces where the computer came out of the hole. And the reality is we are the pieces. And when we come together, the process in physics called emergence means we will create things that we can't even imagine at this moment. And it only is a result of what? Sharing our collective awareness. And that's why every human has awareness, but our collective awareness is the destination.
The euphoria of it, Bruce, when we realize that collectively we can all come together and we start doing it. When you hear of a whole group of people and in one place on the side of a country and in the other side of a country doing things that are solution-oriented, that are just pulling the strings of community together, there will be a time when there's going to be a massive breakthrough, and it's going to be more than a revolution. It's going to be a paradigm shift.
Well, absolutely. It's actually, it's a critical threshold. Consider each one of us as a unit of energy, which we are. And I say, guess what? It only takes a coalition of enough units to make a spark big enough to affect the whole. And I said, well, how many people does it take to make a spark big enough to affect a whole? Half? I go, not even that much. A small percentage of the people coherently, meaning working together in harmony, can generate enough conscious potential to shift the entire population. So it's not like, oh my God, if we have to wait for each individual to acquire this consciousness, how many million years will it take? I go, no, that's the issue. It only takes a small number of us to come together, and I think it's like the square root of 1 or 2 or something.
1%, that's what
1% of the population.
That's the story, yes.
Yeah, and it's like, and then what? And then it's an instantaneous boom. So it's not like a gradual accumulation, it's like a quantum jump.
Telepathic.
It's going to happen. It is. It's all because the idea is, you know, the vision that our conventional physics is you're a separate body, I'm a separate body, we're separate entities. And I go, well, that's a Newtonian world of physical things. And I say, well, what did quantum world say? Oh, everything that you see as physical turns out not to actually be physical, but to be units of energy. It's an illusion. Physicality is an illusion. I say, but I can see you and I can touch you. I say, only with the lights on. Everybody's joking. And I go, no, I mean it this way. The only reason you can see me, I'm an invisible energy. And you say, but how can I see you? And I say, because photons of light from a source, the sun or a lamp, when they hit the surface of our energy bodies, the light is reflected back. So you're not seeing the energy that I'm made out of. You're seeing a veneer of photons that hit me at the surface and are reflected back to your eye. So what you visually see is, I say, oh, I can visually see you. And I go, you are seeing a reflection of the photons, because underneath that veneer, I'm an energy being. There is nothing physical under there. That's what quantum physics said. And I go, so what's the relevance in that? And here's the answer. If everything was just physical, I can take particle A and particle B and say, separate them. And now let's talk about particle A and not talk about particle B and see what. And I go, in a mechanical world, that presumably be correct. But then I say, wait, but underneath, particle A is not a particle. It's an energy. An energy B from what is a particle B. And I go, well, what's the difference? I say, particles consume, you know, conceivably, I can separate them. But what about energy? And I say, well, look, you're sitting in a room right now, wherever you are, there's telephone broadcasts, radio broadcasts, television broadcasts, they're all going through the room right now. There's energy. And I say, okay, can you separate the energy in your room? Can you cause the television energy to go on one side of the room and the radio energy to go on the other side of the room? No, you can't separate energy. I go, ah, and that's the point. Humans are not physical entities, as Newtonian physics says, because when quantum physicists said, what is that particle, that physical thing you call an atom? It's physical, right? And quantum physicists went inside and said, oh, yeah, they're little particles, electrons, protons, neutrons. Yeah, but they said, what are they made out of? And that's when the world changed, because when they looked inside, well, so what's an electron or a neutron or a proton made out of? Nothing physical. It's made out of energy. It's an illusion. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, matter is an illusion. And I go, yes, it is. It has force, so you can feel it, but it's not physical like we perceive it with light. And then I say, so then what is the ultimate conclusion? The ultimate conclusion is, old view, Newtonian physics, you and I are separate from each other. New view, quantum physics, everything that is made out of atoms is actually made out of energy. The energy cannot be separated from each other, just as the broadcast in the room can't be separated. So you and I don't care where you are at this moment listening to this broadcast, you are not physically there. You're an energy in the field. And I'm an energy in the field. And everybody's an energy in the field. And I say, well, what's the purpose of understanding this instead of having the energies collide with each other, making heat and resistance between the energies? What if we all came together in uniform? Then the power of that energy is transformative of the entire universe in which we live. And that's the consequent end conclusion of quantum physicists such as Stephen Hawking. Stephen Hawking even said, human consciousness is responsible for the unfolding of the universe. And all of a sudden, it's like,
that's good.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Very good.
So it says, so who are we? And I said, stop seeing yourself as a particle and start seeing yourself as the energy. You are the field.
Yes. Well, we are. But we're part of this gigantic information field, which is our planet. But just the atoms between you and I, Bruce. I mean, if we froze all the atoms within the biosphere right out to the end of the atmospheric field, we would just be one.
It's all one. That's what I'm trying to say. I can't separate these broadcasts, and an atom is a broadcast. As a matter of fact, that's the law of physics. I use this in my lecture right out of, I love a Scientific American article just to give people, I'm not making this stuff up. It says, every atom and molecule emits light or energy of a characteristic wavelength and absorbs light and energy of a characteristic wavelength. And I show the people the science. It says every atom and molecule emits and absorbs energy. And I look at them in the face and I say, are you made out of atoms and molecules? And everybody nods up and down. And I go, then as this reveals, you are sitting there broadcasting your energy, but you're also affected by the energy of everything that's physical around you, and it influences your energy. And you go, wow, is this new science? I go, well, maybe the science is new, but guess what? The Asians have been working with feng shui for a few thousand years, which is based on what? Every object has energy, and how you place the objects is how you place the energy, and you can use it to enhance your energy or cancel your energy. And that is, after a few thousand years, we finally have a science that says, yeah, that invisible stuff is, as Einstein would say, is the sole governing force of matter, the invisible.
Yes, well, there's so much, Bruce, there's so much. It's like, from my standpoint, we are here to spiritualize matter. And as human beings, I mean, it's very important for us now just to love our neighbor as ourselves. That's the next extension.
Well, there's, and let's just fix that one, because in workshops that I've worked with a lot of people on belief change modifications, let me give you a simple fact. 80 to 90% of the people, when tested for the belief, I love myself, 80 to 90% of the people will not test positive for that. And that means 8, 9 out of every 10 of you, including you, unconsciously will not love yourself. And I said, yes, because of the programming that we got as critical of ourselves, we are critical of ourselves. And to love ourselves is the first step before you can understand the love of the world in which we live.
That's been my greatest battle. My greatest battle. And a lot of New Zealanders, we're so self-effacing at so many levels. Oh, you can't. You'd be your ego, your skite, you're full of yourself. And yet, getting rid of that, we still have to love ourselves by eliminating our shadow.
100%.
Our hurts, our losses, our betrayals, all those sorts of things.
Right. It's just a program, and we misunderstood the program.
Bruce, it's lovely for you to be able to come here and help us rewrite the program. Because, I mean, there's so much possibility. I see possibility all the time.
I see that possibility as well, and that's why I'm so lucky to have been granted residency in New Zealand, because I was looking for where could I live when the world was in upheaval. And I actually started coming here when George Bush was president, thinking, I don't know those people who voted for this guy, and I better think about another country. And thank God this country has given me residency. So thank you, every one of you, for that.
Excellent, Bruce. And we look forward to hearing from you with new initiatives in the future.
You bet.
Okay. Thanks once again.
There was a pause in there. No, there was not one pause in there, Tim.
Oh, well, okay. If I get my words here and I blank slate them, we're fine.
That was great.
Yeah. You can listen to many previous interviews at planetaudio.org.nz/greenplanet. 5 minutes after 9 a.m. for the next 7 days. But better still, iPod and stream can be obtained 10 hours after broadcasting on greenplanetfm.com. It has a huge database of interviews in the archive. You can also subscribe on itunes.com and follow Green Planet FM on facebook.com/greenplanetfm. Come and love us. We love being loved. And twitter.com/greenplanetfm. This is Tim, in the spirit of Aroha, saying Kia Kaha and Haere Rā. Thank you for tuning into this Green Planet radio show. I trust you have derived both enjoyment and insight as we empower ourselves with a greater understanding of the magnificent, multifaceted world that we inhabit. In these coming times of rapid change, it's going to take raw courage and inner resolve. And so I thank you, as we all remain both focused yet relaxed, as we challenge the status quo and let go of the old, as we energetically co-create the new paradigm. Because I can assure you, every one of you are important now. When you go to bed tonight, ready for well-earned rest and sleep, realize that what you think, feel, and do is part of your unfolding destiny. And when we commit to a higher act of goodwill and or community service, providence also lines up, so that every conversation we have, every email we send, every phone call we make, and every meeting we attend, that we stand in our power and communicate intelligently, warmly, with integrity, knowing that we are actively shaping a collective future that will benefit all our children and grandchildren, as well as that of a larger community. This is Tim Lynch in Auckland from Nuclear Free New Zealand and mobilizing unity consciousness, wishing you a stupendous week of heartfelt success. I say bye-bye and hari rā.